Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope's here.
Hello.
And joining us for a another one of these live, quote-unquote, shows. Basically, we're broadcasting this live, and we're going to take some questions from the chat room that is full of people listening to this. We did this once before, and it went okay, so we're doing it again. And just like last time, we are joined by a graphic designer extraordinaire. He works for Discotech and on a bunch of video games and stuff. It's Brady Hartel. Hey, Brady.
Hey, got my name wrong again, but that's okay.
Is it Brady Hartle?
Yes, it's Brady Hartle.
Yeah, I always forget.
That's okay.
I'm professional.
Everybody forgets. Yeah. It's okay, though. I expect it by now.
All right, so I guess we'll start with just a round, because we got some Twitter questions, too. It's a lot of, these are heavy question shows, so, but I did want to sort of go around and find out if people have been watching anything, and I know Hope has been watching a whole lot of stuff.
Yep.
So why don't we start with you?
I've been watching a lot of things, I guess. Things that I enjoy or things that I hate, just nothing boring. Basically, I try to keep up with as much as I can from this season so I can be, like, a good, helpful assistant editor on the new daily streaming project. But I only watch anime if it's not boring, so that's, like, That cuts down a lot for me because I'm pretty easily bored with stuff that I've seen before because I've been watching anime for too long, I guess. But of the stuff that's come out this season, there's a lot of good stuff. I was really really pleasantly surprised by Love Stage, and once I've given it some more time, season two of Free. I was a little dodgy because at first it seemed like the first season of Free was pretty tightly written, and then the second season has been kind of meandery, but it all kind of came together really recently, and I was like, okay, that's all right, bravo, slow clap for you, Free. That was you know, pretty well pulled together. And Black Butler's back, so there's that. I'm really enjoying Tokyo Ghoul. There's always more JoJo's. Barakamon was a really big surprise. Like, that's a really neat show, and it's super funny and well directed. So yeah, I mean, like, there's probably too much to bring up, so I'll think I'll just, like, talk about stuff as it comes up in conversation. But I'm watching a ton of stuff, at least, like, keeping up with what's happening in it, even if I can't, like, plow through every episode update-wise, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, doing the daily streaming stuff kind of changes, I guess, how you consume a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And there's always more Space Dandy. It's easy to forget stuff like Space Dandy and JoJo's, because it's like it didn't really go away. It's, you know, it's always kind of been there, but, you know. But that stuff's, you know, great.
Right. All right. Anything else?
I'm watching actually paying attention to and writing about Rail Wars, which normally I wouldn't be. That's one of the, it's too boring. I wouldn't watch it even just to hate watch it. Some hate watch stuff this season. Akamega Kill and Sword Art Online 2. That's some good hate watch stuff this season. But I'm watching Rail Wars because I got to write about it, and it's just so lame. Like, there's no better word for it than just lame. Like, did you know this stuff about train trivia? And you should really join the JNR, because if you did, you would get to fight bad guys, and also there will be boobs all around you. And yeah, right, you know. It's just kind of desperate.
Right. Yeah, I when we were sort of doling out the shows, that was one of the few that no one had taken. And it was like, well, we need someone to write about it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, sure, I'll take that. And you took it over what? Nobunaga Concerto?
Oh, yeah, I'll take that over fucking... Because I don't trust myself to know enough about the, like, Jidaigeki-style stuff to be able to follow Nobunaga Concerto very well. I know that I can understand Rail Wars, so I don't... And, I mean, like, of the two big things that I haven't mentioned yet, Terror in Resonance and Aldno Zero. Like, I am following those, but I'm not, like, that excited about either of them. One of them I've lost all faith in. Aldno Zero I've kind of lost all faith in. And Terror and Resonance, I'm just waiting for it to get to the punchline. Like, it's a really well-crafted show, but it's just sort of like... It's like a tea kettle that hasn't started screaming yet, and you're just waiting, you know? Like, it's... There's tea in there, and you know it's good tea, but there's just not much for me to say yet. Like, I feel like I'm not going to get the full point of that until it reaches the end. The writer is infamously writing it under a pseudonym, presumably because whatever he's burning up to, like, deliver on that is going to be really controversial. So, you know.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, that's a lot of stuff. Brady, you've been watching anything?
Hoop days, all sorts of hoop days. No, like my watching regimen is completely like the opposite of Hope, which is I haven't watched anything really recent. I picked up Gotchman Crowds and I started that, which is kind of neat. I'm trying to think. Like I've been watching a lot of Sherlock Hound, too much Castle of Cagliostro, just for obvious reasons. Just stuff like that. I wait for you guys to watch it, and then, I mean, I've said it before, I wait for you guys to watch it, and then I'll end up watching it, like, later, when I have time. Because I don't have time for just, like, to invest in a show and it turn out to be sort of bad. So, you know, I've spent my most time playing just old games. I pulled out my Sega CD and I've been playing like Popful Mail and Snatcher and just old games like that, and a couple comics. Like a bunch of my friends did a big anthology called Black Torch. If you know any of the artists, Alex Ahad or Willie Wong or Mariel Cartwright or my friend Stephanie Sheed, they all did a really big anthology, which is really cool, called Black Torch. Brian Leon and Malley's new book came out, so I've been sort of starting that, but I haven't gotten through any of it really. But yeah, it's mostly that stuff, old games and stuff. I honestly don't have a lot of time either, so if I devote it to a show, it has to be good, usually.
Yeah, I don't know. I got through that the Brian Lee O'Malley book, Seconds. I got through that in one sitting. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just sort of like, there's not that much dialogue, so you kind of just blow through it really quick. I think it took me like an hour and a half or something like that to read through. It's good. I liked it. But yeah,
same. Like, I
not a long read.
Once.
Yeah.
I was like, but this is just going along. Like, I didn't want to put it down.
It moves along very quickly, too. Like, the pacing's really good. But it's over, and it's a one-shot, so it's like, all right, well, that was good.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it took, like 2 years for him to do it, so...
Something like that.
I hope it's good. Like, I mean, like, I hope his second thing... Well, this is actually his third, because he did, what was the first comic called he did?
There's one. The Sea, something Beyond the Sea, or...
Something like that, yeah. Which was good, too.
Yeah, that's the only one of his I haven't read, actually. Of course, he's only got like 3 or 4 things, but
yeah. It's a lot slower. It's a lot slower and more melancholy of a book than Scott Pilgrim. I mean, I guess it's not hard to be, but it's very slow, very thoughtful. It's quite different in the narrative than Scott Pilgrim was.
Right.
They both contain the bread makes you fat joke. Like, I wonder if that's just going to be a through line for him. I have to include the bread makes you fat joke.
I have to warn people on bread.
He's almost constantly making that joke on Twitter, so...
Maybe he's just adopted it as his, like, trademark.
I don't know. I don't know. All right, well, is there anything, like, you're looking forward to? Like, anything you've got your eye on that, like, at the end of the season you might check out?
Anime-wise, not specific. Like, it's funny, like, listening to Hope, like, mention all these shows, it's like the only thing that I'm really watching on that list is JoJo's, and, I mean, that's obvious, and some Space Dandy, but, I've been so busy, I've not even looked at this season at all, and I guess I need to sit down and read some of the daily streaming stuff, because that'll probably give me an idea of what I should look at, but no, I have not really... followed much of what's going on right now. I'm sorry, it's kind of boring to say that. I've been looking forward more to games, really. Just stuff like, you know, Under Night and Birth just came out, and that's a big fighter by the Melty Blood guys, French Bread. So I've been looking forward to that. And I think Guilty Gear Xrd is supposed to come out soon, and I played the crap out of that at E3, and it's like one of those weird games where it's like all 3D and you can't tell, and it's one of the first games that tricked me into thinking it wasn't 2D, so I'm sort of looking forward to that. But not much on the anime side, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a very diverse season this summer. Like, especially compared to, like, past summers. I don't know, like, it's... I feel like there's a nice large variety of things, and that makes me happy, because the worst part of being an anime fan that wants to keep up with this stuff, to me, is when it gets truly homogenous. Like, when the homogeneity is too... And you begin to settle. Like, you begin to go, well, I still want to appreciate stuff, see, like, that wasn't too bad. Things that are, like, you wouldn't normally sit through. I don't feel like I have that problem this season or for the past couple, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just going to say, in terms of games, like, I think everything I was interested in got pushed to the next spring, which is just, that's just normal now. Like, everything announced for, like, holiday 2014 or whatever, anything announced for the holiday season will get pushed to the spring. There's, like, a few things left over that actually meet their original release date. But, yeah, not a whole lot. Like, I'm excited about that Mario Kart DLC.
That looks cool. I'm pretty hyped for Smash Brothers. I mean, it's another Smash Brothers, but I think, like Mario Kart, it'll be fun for a while to play. I think this Mario Kart, though, with the DLC, has a little more longevity than the last one, even though the last one was also kind of panned. But even still, like, I think this one feels like it's got more longevity in it. And Nintendo's kind of doing right, I think, this time with that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, my rabbit chewed through all of the cables connecting my Wii U to anything. And so I had to rebuy those cables, and then she chewed through those. And then I just let it sit there for like a month because I was tired of rebuying cables for it. Just recently, I bought the cables I needed and hooked it back up and started playing Mario Kart again and was like, this is, yeah, it's still a lot of fun. Like, I'm not tired of it. I hope that there's, that, you know, once that DLC comes out, I'm sure everyone will go back and start playing it, and there will be a multiplayer, you know, enough people doing multiplayer to make it worth it. So that should be fun.
I'm excited for the Hyrule Dynasty Warriors game because I'm easy prey like that for Zelda things.
Right.
There's such mixed things about that, but I'm just like, well, if it's fun, why not, you know? Like,
I just want to play as OG Ganondorf and blow people up. Like, that's all I want to do. I don't have high hopes for how good the game is or isn't going to be. I just want to, like, control the little guy, walk out, and, like, blow up 20 moblins with a big purple ball of energy, you know. That's it.
Yeah. It looks neat, I guess. We'll check it out. I mean, you're much more excited about that than I am. Mm-hmm. But those Musou games are all the same, so I'm kind of hoping at least it's mixed up a little bit. Because I've played a few of them, and that's all you need to, it's kind of all you need to do to decide whether or not you like them.
Kinda, yeah. It's like the thing is too. It's like pick your flavor and stick to that one. Like if you like Gundam, don't care about ancient history. Play the Gundam ones because they're all the same, really.
Right.
Just different siding applied to the formula.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reskinned. Yeah. All right. I haven't been watching a ton of stuff. I did watch this movie that Wit Studio made. Wit Studio, they animated Attack on Titan for a while. It's called HAL. Funimation just put this out. It's billed as a movie. Actually, in fact, it says HAL, the movie, on the cover. Which I never understood why anime companies really feel the need to do that. Like, to always put the movie or the motion picture, which is worse, I think, on anything that's supposed to be a film. I think it's to differentiate it from, like, a TV show or something, but... It always sounds really awkward. Like, Slayers, the motion picture. It's like, ugh. God. No one even says motion picture anymore. Anyway, so I watched HAL.
Yeah, I changed that on Fatal Fury, I think. I made it the movie.
Yeah. So I watched HAL, and when I got it in, I put it on Twitter and said, like, hey, has anyone seen this? Is it worthwhile? And everybody was like, well, the ending is fucking garbage and it ruins the entire film. And I was like, really? Yeah, well, it's only an hour, so I'll watch it. And they were right. They were 100% right. The ending to that movie is terrible, and it makes the rest of the movie completely pointless in hindsight, and I don't recommend it. I mean, it is only an hour, and the animation's kind of nice. So, you know, if you're bored, maybe check it out. But the ending is so dumb. It's such a dumb gotcha thing. And, I mean, the thing I can say without spoiling anything is that this is supposed to be a romance. Like, a sort of a bittersweet sci-fi romance story. But it's only an hour, so... And they don't do a lot of character building. So you don't particularly get to know the characters very well. Most of it is a series of montages set to tinkly music where you kind of maybe learn maybe a little bit about these characters, but mostly it's like they go to the festival. And just so people know what the premise is, basically a girl's boyfriend dies, she's despondent, they have a thing called robot therapy where they can make an android version of your dead loved one to help you through the grieving process, basically. So they make an android version of her boyfriend, and he shows up, and they start going through the process together. And he learns about her boyfriend's checkered past, and she slowly starts coming kind of out of her shell a little bit and accepting him. And then there's the ending, which changes all of that and totally just makes you wonder why you wasted your time watching a movie in the first place. It's so dumb. But the packaging they gave it is nice, and the dub seems fine, and I don't know. I can't recommend it because the ending's so dumb. So, you know.
Really dumb.
Yeah.
I can already kind of guess.
That's kind of what I watched. I also watched all of that FX Fargo series, which is really, really good. I, like, strongly recommend to people, if they skipped it, watch it. It's very, very, very entertaining in a what's going to happen next kind of way. It's not particularly complicated or anything, but it's really worth seeing. It'll probably be on Netflix really soon because it's an FX show. So, yeah. Like, sometime in the next 2 months or so, that'll probably show up. If you didn't see it, check it out. It's super good. I really enjoyed it. I plowed through it in, like, 3 or 4 days or something like that. It was 10 episodes. So, yeah.
That's been on my list, yeah.
All right. Let's get to these questions, because we got a lot of them. Like, we have the chat to get through and these Twitter questions to get through. And so let's go ahead and start with the Twitter stuff. Just 1 second here. Okay. We get this question a lot. Madman400 asks, which anime from the past 2 years do you consider a guilty pleasure? I hope I'm going to let you take that one.
I mean, my first reaction was, oh, Free, right? But that's not fair to Free. Like, that Free is too good of a show to call it a guilty pleasure. That's not really fair. And I don't even, like, it's not even, a matter of, but even if it's a good story, you enjoy it for a guilty reason, because I don't find the dude models in that attractive. They're weird. They're too girly and overly detailed. It's weird. But, I mean, like, I genuinely just enjoy the story on that for its own merits, but... a guilty pleasure. I don't know. Like, I guess my guilty pleasures are things that I, like I said, I hate watch a fair amount of stuff just because anime being what it is, if it's not boring straight up front, if it's, like, sort of in-your-face offensive straight up front, it will probably continue to be that way for a while, and so you can, like, If you are amused by that, as I am, then you can keep going for a while and just see how much further it's going to worsen itself. But the problem is, thinking back 2 years is too hard, because stuff disappears after a while. Like, I remember the good stuff. I remember having now actually seen Fate Zero and Psycho Pass and stuff like that, Silver Spoon and stuff like that I've recently written about. I remember that stuff, but I don't remember the bad or just okay, but I'm enjoying it for dumb reason stuff. Like, that stuff falls off of your brain. So I guess I'll just have to go really recent, like this season specifically, Sword Art Online. is—it's actually become less guilty because it's not as bad as it once was. Now it's just sort of dumb. It's sort of dumb and transparently self-insert, and the villain is named Death Gun, but it's not gross anymore. It's perfectly, like, it's completely inoffensive. Like, it's not sexist or gross or creepy at all. Largely because there aren't really any women in it anymore. There's exactly one female character, and she's actually developed. So it's like, wah. Anyway, long and short of it is, it's hard to remember that stuff. So I'll just say Sword Art Online.
Yeah, I didn't really take a lot of pleasure in Sword Art Online, so it doesn't really count. But yeah, no, I can't think of anything that I would describe as a guilty pleasure. Generally, like, if something's, like, really, really bad, I don't, you know, if it's a TV show, I'm not going to watch, like, 13 episodes of a terrible show. I mean, it would have to be, like, so terrible that it's just completely hilarious start to finish that I couldn't stop myself from watching it. But a TV show, like so bad it's good stuff, guilty pleasure stuff, that's best contained in movie form, I think. Like, hour and a half or so. That's about right. I don't really want to sit for 13 episodes, no matter how, like, funny it is. I don't know.
It is easier when it's just, like, 20 minutes a week, basically.
I guess.
It gets away from you.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Maybe. I don't know. I kind of agree with Zach on movies. I mean, like, my one guilty pleasure I can think of is kind of older than that. It's, like, Needless. Like, I remember liking that, even though it's not particularly good.
Oh, man, I remember that.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, like, I think, like, most, like, my thing is sort of, like, the most current, like, quote-unquote garbage anime is kind of, like, you look at older stuff, and it's, like, this is kind of funny because it's got weird designs or just terrible looking, or, hey, look, they ripped off Eva. Like, when you look at terrible stuff now, it's like, ha-ha, this is kind of a misogynist, and why did they come up with this idea? It's really gross, and it's not fun to watch that. I don't know. I find I get more mileage out of old stuff being sort of weird to watch, but, yeah, I think movies even more, just because it's such a wider spectrum of topics to go through and find weird stuff.
Yeah, for me, it's mostly just a duration thing, but, yeah. Like, I think this is a guilty pleasure that would, like, wear off after, like, three episodes. And that's not so much a pleasure anymore. I was going to do that with Sword Art Online 2, but I just didn't.
It's not that upsetting. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I thought about it. I don't know.
I meant that as a negative. Like, I think it would be more fun to watch if it was more upsetting. But it's like, worse. Oh, no, this is capable. Oh, well.
Hate watching is a different thing. Hate watching is different. Guilty pleasure is, I'm enjoying, I know this is bad, but I'm legitimately enjoying it.
Yeah.
So bad it's good is, this is terrible and it's making me laugh. Hate watching is, this fucking sucks and I want to see just how fucking sucky it's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are three different ways of watching something.
Well, that's why I specifically said Sword Art Online and not some of the more terrible stuff like Mahoka, where I really just feel sick watching it, that I don't know why I keep going. But because I like parts. Like, I genuinely enjoy parts of Sword Art Online. I like the world building, because that's the part of it. The part of my brain that Sword Art Online's world building accesses is, it's still alive and it still likes to be fed a little bit, I like the game mechanics and world stuff in it, because it seems real and it seems natural and it doesn't seem exposition-y or whatever. It's just fun to lose yourself in a little bit, but then you contrast that with all the bad stuff and you have a disjunct experience, so.
Alright. Okay. Also from Madman 400, what are your most wanted shows for Toonami? My answer for that is they're already showing it. Like, Space Dandy is what I could the only thing I could possibly ever want. Like, that show does it for me in a way that, like, I don't think anything else really has. So, you know, they've already got the show that I would want the most.
Yeah.
Anything else that would pop up on there, like, they kind of already cherry pick, like, the hit shows and stuff, so you know, in terms of just, like, good for business, good for anime, good for the industry, good for the hobby, good for growth, good for money, you know, they're showing Attack on Titan, and they're, you know, right now we don't have another giant hit show. I think JoJo's Bizarre Adventure would do really well, but they would have to start from the beginning, and I don't know that it would carry an audience until it gets really, really, really good and fun and gets to the part everyone talks about. People were not that into JoJo's until Stardust Crusaders started.
Mm-hmm. I think they could start with that. Most people start with Stardust. You don't need to see the first two parts. Like, I think they could. It's like just do that because the entire premise of it is, here's what happened to the first two generations of your family, Jotaro, and he tells him, and so you don't have to watch it. It's like, oh, thanks.
Well, I mean, it's kind of what those... it's just a reset. I mean, they do that in just about everything. And, yeah, you could start there. I like Battle Tendency, though. I think it's not as entertaining as Stardust Crusaders, but I still like Battle Tendency. I liked Phantom Blood as well, just because it was, like, such old-school, let's fight the big bad villain sort of thing. And they did it straight, and I sort of liked it. I think you could just skip to Stardust. I mean, that's what they did in the 90s anyway. They went to the most popular part. Nobody cared. Those OAVs did really well.
Yeah, but my point wasn't that people didn't like JoJo's, the first two parts of it. My point was that it didn't get super popular until the popular part started. Mm-hmm. And if you want people to sit through 26 episodes of not the best, most popular, upfront, crazy part...
Yeah,
it's a tough sell. So like they would probably need to start with Stardust Crusaders.
Even though they probably wouldn't.
Like if they were going to get the show, the contract would probably require them to show the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like it should be sort of like a Dragon Ball Z situation where they play Stardust Crusaders first, and then once people get hooked on that, then they go back and play the other ones. It would probably work better that way.
Maybe. I don't know if they would. Like, you know, all this shit has to be approved by Japan. And
oh, yeah, of course.
They probably wouldn't say yes to that. So, you know, that's a good question. But I think that's the obvious pick is, like, if anything's going to be on Toonami, yeah, probably JoJo's. Like,
that and Kill la Kill, but in both cases you have censorship problems. They're both too much for TV.
Right. Kill la Kill, like, I'm just like, how they would have to censor it. They would have to paint over a bunch of it. The same thing with like Helsing Ultimate, like that would be you would think that would be a pick, but like they would have to edit that down too, like quite a bit.
Well, that's going to show on Toonami.
Oh, is it? Okay, I didn't know that.
Picked up, yeah.
Oh, okay, well, I'm guessing they're going to edit some of that down then.
Like that's one of those things where like, how are they going to show that? Like,
yeah,
an hour.
It's. No, not like in terms of time schedule. I mean, in terms of content.
Yeah, because it gets really gross. Like it just gets really.
Helsing Ultimate's super disgusting.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't think they censor Attack on Titan very much, and that's pretty gross. So, you know, it's not as gross, but it's, you know, it's up there.
Like I think like that the newer the Fujiko Mine show would do all right on Toonami. Like I know that did like it was a soft seller for them, but I think it would do all right. I mean, it's really short. They used to do, like, anthologies and stuff, like Gorillaz and Inocella 555 and all that, too. So, I don't know, Short Piece maybe, too. I'm not sure. Obviously JoJo's. And I have to imagine that they're already trying for Sailor Moon. Like, I mean, unless it's already announced, I don't know it. But, like, I imagine they're already trying to get that.
The 90s one or Crystal?
That doesn't really matter. Either one.
Oh, I think it matters.
I would imagine they would want the 90s one.
Yep.
Especially I think average Joe viewer on TV would watch the new one, even if it's not
no,
so great.
No, it's super boring. I can barely sit through it.
Well, all of that aside, they'd have to wait a very long time to show it because it's been how many months and it only runs every 2 weeks, so
yeah.
It's on like episode 5. So you know if they're gonna show it every week, they're gonna have to wait a long time.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Plus, they keep delaying it even more. Like, I think there was a 3-week gap this most recently.
How hard is it to finish a show? It's not even that great of quality.
Well, it's a web animation, as it turns out, or was supposed to be, and yeah. So I guess people staffed on it.
So it was supposed to be a web animation, and they were like, no, we're pushing this to be a actual thing?
I believe so.
Wow,
don't
okay.
Don't quote me on that. That's just what I read, so.
I wonder if they had a bunch of web episodes finished, And then they're like, let's try and get this quality. That's why it's every 2 weeks, because they're touching up previously finished episodes.
Could be, yeah.
I don't know. That's weird. That whole show is fucking weird. Like, it's... production's weird. The execution is weird. Everything about it is just is weird.
Horse Luna. She's now affectionately referred to as Horse Luna.
Yep. Bizarre. Anyway, from Schrodinger's Matt, do you get tired of being asked about your guilty pleasures?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Torchica asks, Under the Dog just met its Kickstarter goal. Thoughts? Well, good for them.
Yeah.
It looks cool. I think it looks cool.
I did
controversies
not,
aside.
I did not contribute because I draw the line there ethically, but good for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see what they're going to make. They got their wish. They get to make it without a production committee breathing down their neck, so we'll see if they can pull it off. In my experience, generally when you remove the shackles from... when you remove the limitations from an artist and they can just do whatever, the result is rarely... it's rarely really what you want. Like, sometimes having limitations really helps a production. And, you know, because if there's no limitation, if there's no real production committee, you wind up with, like, The Thief and the Cobbler, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't want that. No one wants The Thief and the Cobbler. I mean, as a film, like, as an exercise in animation, it's a gorgeous piece of brilliance. But right. as a film that you just sit down and watch...
Mm-hmm.
Eh. But we'll see. I have faith in those guys. They're smart. They know what they're doing. So I bet you it'll turn out at least okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all right. Again from Madman400, do you think the likes of Free and Haikyuu are making sports anime popular? Someone I know keeps saying yes. No.
And no, that's the... Those are getting watched for The Boys, and that's it. That's like saying, like... do you think people are getting more interested in the military because stuff like Girls in Panzer and Apote is getting made? And it's like, I don't think so. I mean, like, that's just combining... It's combining, like, cute boys with other athletic boys. So you see them jump around and you see, like, them in tiny shorts and you see their asses and you see their abs. That's... But it's not... It's a cause and effect thing that's reversed. So you want to see the guys doing sports. You're not interested in the sport. That's... Yeah. That's the thought process.
Yeah. Sports anime, like, you know, real sports anime is like Hajime no Ippo or like Cross Game or, you know, fucking whatever soccer/baseball shows come out that are not about hot guys.
Mm-hmm. I would say Haikyuu qualifies, but it's like because a lot of dudes like it in Japan. But that one's just doubled. Like, a lot of girls like it for different reasons. I mean, I'm sure they're into the volleyball, too. It's just that it's... Haikyuu covers both bases, which is why it's such a mega hit. It is genuinely a sports anime, but that's not why American fangirls like it. I think they like it for the characters.
Yeah.
Right.
Sports, like regular straight sports anime never really does well here. Like, I can think of, like, one... maybe two that ever did all right here. But yeah, like, straight-up sports anime just never really does well in the U.S.
Yeah, so increasing the popularity of sports anime, no. But well-executed anime that has sports as a theme pasted over pretty boys usually does pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And Free is of a pedigree that is higher than usual. So, yeah.
Well, any theme pasted over cute boys usually.
Nah, it's not true. There's plenty of Fujoshi stuff tanks. It doesn't always do so well. Okay. Last one for Madman400. What do you think is the worst movie of the year so far?
Well.
I mean, that we've seen?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think.
We didn't see Turtles, so...
Well, no one's saying that's, like, that bad.
Really?
Yeah. It's not good. No one's saying, like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Oh, it's so horrible. Everyone's just saying, like, sure is a movie.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like it's middling. It's very middling, from what I heard, yeah.
I mean, mostly what I heard was, like, joyless and nobody likes it, so...
Yeah, like, I actually stopped going to see movies that I didn't really want to see, like Transformers 4.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, so... Yeah.
I am a Transformers fan, and I didn't bother to go see Transformers 4, so...
Boy, that's a toughie. I watch a lot of bad movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now, like... You know, in addition to being, like, the worst movie I've seen this year and the worst, maybe the second worst movie I've ever seen.
Right.
Is that Jay and Silent Bob cartoon movie that came out that's, like...
Barely a film.
Brain poison.
Yeah, it wasn't...
It's barely a film.
It wasn't in theaters, per se. So if you're thinking theatrical release movie, I guess that's not... That doesn't count, but that is the worst thing I've seen all year, and maybe ever.
That movie is just awful. It is super goopy, cartoon poopy.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's not pretty bad. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
That's very, very bad.
Like, you can't really downplay how bad that thing is.
It's actively offensive, I would say. Like, just all the way through. Like, every second of that movie is actively offensive and awful and terrible and bad.
Yeah.
Don't look it up, Jay and Silent Bob. No, just kidding. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah, I would say that's probably it. I mean, the year's not over yet, so... plenty of bad shit to see between now and the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't seen A Million Ways to Die in the West. I hear that's really unwatchably terrible.
Yeah.
It's... You know, that... Okay, so that movie... I actually saw that. So that movie's kind of like... It sits between this sort of, like... It, like, straddles this line where... Either Seth MacFarlane wanted to make a genuine Western, or he wanted to make a comedy, and it's sort of like his kind of comedy, you know. And it's like it doesn't go completely one way or the other, and it's like super mixed tonally. And it's just, I mean, it's not good, but it's just really weird to watch it because it's like half the time he's trying to make these really terrible, awful jokes, and the other time it seems to be trying to be sincere. It's really weird, like it's really weird tonally when you watch it.
Well, I will probably find out. All right, moving on. Jeff Tebbets asks, so much negativity in the Twitterverse lately. Is there any recent anime or game-related news that has you upbeat? Well, the underdog thing's good news.
Yeah. Toonami's doing well. It's been a pretty good season so far. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of things to be happy about. Mm-hmm. It's just that the internet has just been a... fucking pit of negativity for the last like 2 or 3 weeks. Just nothing but just anger and hate for the last like couple weeks. Like, it's been really bad, you know. And if you spend a lot of time like in nerd circles, it's been inescapable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you cannot get away, especially from all the video game crap. You can't escape it. Like, and if you have an opinion on it, people looking for people to fight with will find you. Mm-hmm. You know, people who don't even follow you, they'll just like type a word into Twitter and like find someone espousing an opinion. And just blast your mentions with bullshit. Like, it's just been really awful.
It really doesn't even matter which side you're on, too. Like,
yeah,
The bad news isn't even like related to works or whatever, or to like to industry directly. It's related to the terrible decisions and attitudes and trends in the community. It's not, you know. It's like, it's not, oh, this is downhill for games, it's gamers. You know, it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. But in terms of good news, there's been some. And, you know, things have been going pretty well for us. I mean, we launched the daily streaming thing. It turned out it's already actually a pretty good size success. Getting lots of good feedback on it, and people seem to enjoy it. And the site's doing really, really well right now. And yeah, things aside from, like, you know, the fucking horrible cesspool that the internet's been for the last couple of weeks, things are going fine otherwise. Like, I got almost no complaints. Aside from how bad the internet is right now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it'll die down. Like, I hope it goes away, but it just... Some new thing explodes, like, every other day, and it just gets it all started back up again.
Mm.
Yeah, it seems like, I get to this lull, it's like, okay, everybody's done sort of yelling, and then somebody comes in shouting, like, well, that's a thing now!
Yeah.
No!
Anyway, Divine Nega asks if there's any fall shows I'm interested in. I have not even looked yet. I concern myself with the current season. I will look at the fall shows about a week before they premiere.
Yeah.
I can't look that far ahead. Like, at this point, I'm so, like, the amount of coverage that we give to a current season takes up all of my time, most of my time. So it's, I'm not even thinking about fall yet. I got a month and a half or so. I'm maybe about a month before that starts. So I'll take that time.
Do they even announce them this early anyway?
They slowly sort of leak out. They build that little chart thing and yeah. Anyway, Portal Blast, asks about Under the Dog, but wants to know what it means for the future of anime on Kickstarter. It's too early to tell. We'll see how that goes. I have no idea, like, what that's going to mean for the rest of the industry, if it's going to be a game changer. I mean, plenty of stuff has been successfully at this point. Well, not plenty of stuff, but a few things have made it through Kickstarter just fine. And that doesn't, you know, it's not like suddenly the entire anime industry changed. So it's just way too early to tell. I mean, right now it's just like OVAs and movies and stuff that are getting sort of funded, and Under the Dog as it currently exists is just an OVA. So, you know, who knows? Maybe at some point somebody will actually get like a TV show funded. But that would, you know, that would be millions of dollars. And I don't know that anime is quite capable of raising millions of dollars on Kickstarter yet.
It would really have to be something unique with a certain, like a specific, like auteur or something doing it, like a certain director. And it would have to be like the right, like, cohesion of just a bunch of different things. I can't see a whole series being done on Kickstarter. So much money.
It would have to be something that is a sequel to a proven success that everybody loves. Like, the only thing I could see getting to that point is, like, we have the original crew. We're going to make 13 more Cowboy Bebops.
Yeah. Who wants that?
We're going to make 13 more of them. That's not the point. The point is that would probably raise millions of dollars.
But I understand.
Less than that, probably not. Yeah. You know, like that's where you'd have to go.
Well, I mean, it's like if you look at it's
you
the thing though. Like,
non-sell, non-sell.
They've already done this sort of Kickstarter before with a Little Witch Academia, and they're still working on that. So it's going to take a while for it to be all done anyway, to even see what the effect of the actual final product of any of this stuff is going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's too early. Even ask the question, really.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, people ask the same question when Kickheart made its funding goal and got produced, and it didn't really change anything aside from letting other people know that if they want to try doing it that way, they can.
Yeah, I guess the only difference is it's given the Japanese more of an option to where to go to look for money, I guess. But
okay. Moving on here, L. Diabetes asks, for Brady, how much fun was it? For people who don't know, you designed the cover for the Dr. Slump discotheque set. And he wants to know how much fun it was to design that.
Oh, I mean, it was really fun. Like, I love really old shows like that. And there's never, like, a lot of art for shows just because it's just old, or just even they've lost it, or they didn't make much back then, or whatnot. So it's like kind of finding a balance between coming up with something cool and like recent looking, while also not kind of completely killing the tone of the show. So there's a challenge to it. Like one thing I hate in box art for older shows is when they create new artwork for it and it looks absolutely nothing like the actual show. I mean. I guess specific example is those cookie jar shows where just nobody cares. They just draw something sort of half-assed and put it on there.
I've seen some Super Mario Brothers covers that are recently that are.
Yeah, I mean, and I think like with those old shows, it's sort of about finding someone who cares about the show to work on that show. Like whoever did the Dungeons & Dragons set recently, like, you can look at the cover and say, oh, they really cared about this show. This looks like they got, like, all the old, like, AD&D book style in there. Whoever drew the cover you know, obviously knew the, you know, the designs from the show. I mean, the same with the new artists they have for those old, like, G.I. Joe and Transformers and Gem and all those. Those guys know those shows. I mean, that's, like, again, sort of why, like, for Mega Man, we just did Mega Man recently, and that's kind of like a love letter to that style of that show, too. And so, you know, it's sort of that mindset. Like, I have a lot of fun with that stuff, really. Just trying to come up with something with nothing, or just the little bits and scraps, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's not the only. You do a lot of stuff for them. Did you want to talk a little? Because I know it comes out like in a couple of weeks or something like that. Did you want to talk a little bit about the Mega Man thing?
Oh, okay. So yeah, Mega Man. That comes out in a few weeks. Mega Man was really cool to do. That's where you're faced with a show that absolutely has no artwork whatsoever to it. If you look at that set, everything on that box was created or recreated having to use, just the show. So what I had to work with were, like, really low-resolution TIFFs of shots of the intro. So what we ended up doing is I went to my artist friend, Jonathan Kim. He's an animator by trade, but you may know him from, he did a lot of short films back in the day, but he's a, he's like one of the lead animators on Skullgirls. He's a really good artist. He does a lot of stuff. He's a big fan of Persona. Anyway, I went to him and said, look, we need to come up with a cover to this for this show. I know you love this old show and you're a good artist, you know, want to go and have these with me and just do this. And so I ended up, you know, designing the background and the packaging. And I was like, you know, let's try and do something like this. And I pulled screenshots from the show and kind of manipulated them. And then he put his own spin on it. And then we referenced all the model sheets for the show and tried to make it look as close as possible to the original show and make it look on model and just sort of be reverent to what that show looked like. And, you know, we had to, you know, draw a new logo for it. And I talked to my friend Stephanie Shee, and she's, you know, like amazing in vector graphics. So she did the logo for me. And we, you know, we looked at just all old Mega Man stuff. And I pulled out my old Mega Man 3 cartridge, and I pulled out a lot of just the boxes of old NES games and stuff. And I scanned all the folds and corners and everything. So all the little wear and tear on the box art is from that. And I really just wanted to make it just sort of a love letter to like that old, that the style of that show and just those old NES games, and to really feel like a legitimate thing that was made then. And, you know, it's just a lot of work. I mean, that show in the end, I probably made there's not a lot of money in this, and I probably didn't end up making any actual money on it, but it was just fun to make something cool for that show and just something that I think people are going to appreciate. One thing I can say is that they didn't announce yet, but it's going to have a slip cover too, so it'll have like a cardboard O-sleeve, which will make it look more like an old NES game, which is hopefully going to look pretty cool.
Okay. All right. Scotty415 asks for Hope. How do you like where Aldno Zero is going? Is it becoming another wasted potential like Argantia in regards to Urobuchi?
Yep. So the first three episodes of Aldno, without spoiling anything about the show, the reason specifically that I'm disappointed is the first three episodes of Aldno were really explicit about the tone and the themes that it was playing with, which is here is a first world Earth. Here are giant cities full of people, extremely heavily armed military. Like, basically, they show, you know, Japan's special forces that have been trained. I mean, yes, there's teenagers in them, but it's anime. But they're special forces that have been trained to fend off any potential Martian invasion, because they know the Martians, the relationships are tenuous there, and that they might attack at any point. And they do. And the next three episodes are basically showing the Martians, characterized extremely transparently to me as like imperialist sort of generals, like, well, we're superior, so we need to take these resources from you because you don't deserve them and you don't know how to handle them. And it's like, oh shit, this is imperialism seen globally. Like, and the Martians look like us; they're just normal, you know, dudes, maybe with a little bit more coiffed hair, but they look human. And And I think they are human. I think they're people that have moved to another planet. So the obvious parallel here is this is putting you in the position of basically a downtrodden people that suffered under imperialism. And I thought that was really great, and it was done in a way that was fantastical, and it wasn't super in-your-face obvious. It was just like, here, let me show you why this is horrifying and why this is... captivating, and who these characters are, and it was really good stuff. There were some really good characters in Riot and Slane. They have silly names, but Riot and Slane were the best characters. And then it seems like starting right from episode 4. In retrospect, the line is clean. Like, it's very clean line between here's Urobuchi's writing and here's this other guy. The focus on Aldnoa became. Let's not develop these characters. Like, the most development that the characters get is in the first 3 episodes, and past that, they kind of stop doing their job very well on that, and it's just on what new decisions can we make in the story that seem like it's betraying audience expectations. It's basically a twist. It's a twist collage at this point. It's, but then they found this other robot, and oh, but then it turns out this guy's a tactical genius, even though he doesn't have emotions. Oh, but then... Slane was tortured, and then he was grabbed by this other person, and then, like, and it's just, and then. But then Mars declared peace, but then Mars declared war, and it is just twist on top of twist to no effect, and it's transparent what's going on, which is, like, they're trying to shock and enrapture you, and it's still directed well, it's still a nice-looking show, but it's lost, like... What's the point? What's this about? Why do we care about these people? It's just twist on top of twist on top of twist with just nothing holding it down and keeping it grounded. There's still nothing as shocking for all the dumb twists they've thrown in. There's not a single thing has been as emotionally effective as the death in episode 2. There's a death that's like, gasp, like really genuinely shocking. And they gave the guy just enough characterization that you cared. It wasn't even a major character, but then he goes... kaput, and that's it. And that was the only time that and the thing that happens at the end with Slane and his superior officer at the end of episode 3, it's like all the best stuff is very clearly a Bucci thing, and then after that it's like they just pass it off to people who don't know what they're doing, and this keeps happening, and it's like, well, I should just get used to it and keep my eye on the production credits of things for stuff like this. So yeah, the ways in which it's disappointing are pretty obvious. It's just, it doesn't have anything to say anymore. It's just twist after twist.
Well, at least it has those 80s rocker-sounding names still.
Yeah, it has some silly names.
Renzo Adler asks, is Blu-ray becoming this generation's Laserdisc? No.
Isn't HD DVD this generation's Laserdisc? No, not really even that. Like, there's tons of Blu-ray sales. What is he even talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't, like, go to the store. You couldn't go to the store, and there was a machine that would rent you a Laserdisc for $1. Like, that, it's not quite... The penetration in terms of audience and purchasing and media ubiquity, Blu-ray is much, much, much bigger deal. If you want to go down the, all physical media will be gone, and, okay, you can go down that road, but probably not for a long time. Okay, we really need to get to the chat questions, so I'm gonna skip some of these. Chuo Dori asks, what was the last anime title that you reverse imported and why? For me it was Eva 3.0, but I don't know about I have that. Those are the only movies I do that for. I was gonna buy the Princess Mononoke Blu-ray when I was in Japan, but I had been tipped off that an announcement was coming, so I decided to hold off, and it would have been like $70. It saves me like $45. But yeah, I generally don't import stuff. It's just not necessary. Like, pretty much everything I really want comes out. So
yeah, like the only thing I imported recently was I picked up the UK Perfect Blue set, which is really good. But other than that, like, I picked up those really ancient 1998 Vampire Hunter Darkstalkers set, and just because I have an affection for that crappy Darkstalkers anime. But yeah, like, there's if it's good, it's usually going to come out here. Like, if it's worth buying, it'll usually come out here, at least eventually.
I mean, he did say reverse importing. Chat's sort of pointing this out. I don't even know what he means, so I'm just taking it to say...
Have, like, you ever moved to Japan and bought something on Amazon from America and have it shipped?
Or have I bought a Japanese release of an American show or something? No, I've never done that. So I'm just... The last time I bought a Japanese Blu-ray was Ava, so...
I think he meant importing.
Yeah. I don't think you've bought anything.
No, I don't really import stuff. I mean, again, the stuff that I really want usually gets released. And if it doesn't, if I wait long enough, it eventually will be, so...
Pretty much. I mean, there are a lot of tempting UK things that are coming out, but it'll eventually come out here. Like, that Perfect Blue set is, like, the one thing that felt like, yeah, I think I'll go ahead and grab that.
Groovin asks for Hope, now that Planetarian and Clannad visual novels are licensed, do you plan on playing them?
Well, I mean, to me, at this point, having sampled some of the Sakai Project stuff, to me, my line is kind of going to be... they're more interested in licensing kinetic novels right now because of the ease of translation and presumably lower... I don't know, but I assume, like, lower price to license them. So I'm really more interested only in the visual novels they're bringing over, so... I might take a look at Clannad. I know it's really long, so I might just take a look at it just to see how that's localized. But Planetarian, I think, is a kinetic novel, or at least it's barely a visual novel. Like, there's a couple of choices. But I'm not really interested in the kinetic novel stuff. So for me, I would rather, like, the more choices, the better in visual novels, regardless of whether they're brought over from Japan or made in America. I don't know. If Clannad is mostly just a thing of, oh, I'm curious because this is a big, this was a big cultural otaku phenomenon thing, so I just kind of want to look at it a little bit. But, I mean, like, I'm glad I've seen Higurashi, even though I never finished playing it, because it was like, oh, man, thank God the show exists, so I don't have to play this. But, you know.
That's the exact same thing with Steins Gate, I feel.
Yeah, well, yes, God, I don't want to play Steins Gate, because that's another one where it's like there's very few choices. It's just, it's a lot of world building and monologuing, and thank God that show exists, so you don't have to do that. I don't know, I like stuff that's quick and snappy and gives you a lot of choices. I may really like the medium of visual novels, but I don't always like how it's employed, which is to say, people trying to, basically saying, well, I don't have the money to make an anime, or I can't publish a book, but here, let me make this in place of that. And I don't really have a whole lot of affection for the medium being used that way, so I tend to clock out when it's, oh, have you checked this out? It only has two choices in it, but it's really good. Well, put it in book form or TV form, maybe then.
Well, there's no real excuse not to make it a book now. You can just make a Kindle app or an e-book. Like,
well,
it's...
yes, but it would be in Japanese for a lot of these things.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our Twitter time. Now that we've gotten through those, let's go ahead and take some questions from the chat. So I guess now's your time. I'm calling it now. You can start unloading your questions in the chat.
Unload.
Prepare for terrible things.
The Dominator 1 asks if I'm going to watch Kamen Rider Game now that Hope's been watching it. Nope.
No, he wouldn't be able to sit through it. Like, he wouldn't.
That's one of those guilty pleasures for me, is those tokusatsu shows. Like, just the Japanese ones and even Power Rangers, which Power Rangers is so awful right now. It's like, you look at a show that's not super great to begin with, and it's worse than its former self, like, to the point where they totally fired the original showrunner, it seems like, now, and they've just completely started over for this next season. I might actually check out Game now that it's actually got pretty good buzz on it.
I'm not really into the toku or the sentai, like, they're just not for me. I'm literally only watching that because of who's writing it. That's it. So, as I understand, I don't feel too bad, because I understand it. I'm not the only person doing this, but, yeah.
Surrender Artist asks, what's the deal with postcards and challenge coins as an extra? Who wants these things? Is it a Japanese thing? Am I just out of touch? No. It's the children who are wrong. I don't know. I don't like that stuff. It just sits in a box. Like, it stays in the box. I don't ever do anything with it. I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. I don't know what a challenge coin is or why it's called a challenge coin. Those little extras, for whatever reason, do provide apparently a large incentive for heavy collectors who apparently really like it. So that's fine. You know, whatever they got to do to meet their Kickstarter goal and get these things out the door, if adding those physical extras helps them do that, then that's great. And it's no skin off my nose if that stuff is in the box. I'm just there for the disc anyway. And, I'd like some nice art on the package, but it's no skin off my nose if it's in there. I don't care about paying an extra few dollars for it. I just want the show or the movie. So it's fine. I don't get it. Like, you don't do anything with it. That stuff just goes into like a junk drawer or sits in the box it came in, or it goes in your closet and you forget you had it. And then when you move, you're like, oh, this is that challenge coin throw in box until the next time you move.
I just remember reading through the Bubblegum Crisis Kickstarter. I'm like, what the heck's a challenge coin? Why do I care about this? Mm. Like, who is voting for this? Like, there's so many of those like tchotchke things that are buyer incentive, but like at the end of the day, like, who's doing anything with them? Like, at least I understand if it's an art book. I'm like, okay, here's art from the show, maybe like producer notes, interviews. That makes sense to me, at least as an extra. But like challenge coins, and even if it's something like a shirt, usually it's like the most crappy shirt possible. who remembers that really crappy Full Metal Panic shirt, it's like the most horrible shirt I've ever seen.
I think the Razafan one was worse.
Was the Razafan one worse?
Well, because it was like a 3XL men's like white Hanes with like a tiny little iron-on right in the middle. Like the iron-on was comically small. Like
that's kind of like what it was for Full Metal Panic, but I don't think it was that small.
Yeah, they were both probably equally terrible, but yeah, ugly. All right, Vidit asks, with all the new reviews, has the workload for yourself increased? Yep.
Yes. I'm trying to help.
Not for me.
Helps helping, and we wouldn't have been, we would not have been able to do that if I wasn't able to bring Hope on to help with it. She's doing a great job. But yeah, of course. If I want new things to happen on the site and editorial, I have to create more work for myself. I don't have the money to, I was given the budget to hire some help, and that was after 9 years of just doing it by myself. So things don't. The budget doesn't really change that much for editorial. So I do what I can. But yeah, it always involves more work for me. But that's fine. I want to be able to make things that people want to read. MC Taz asked, how do I feel the daily streaming is going so far? So far, great. Like, it's been going really well. We've seen the early traffic, and it did really well. Very, very well, actually. And people seem to enjoy it. The talkback threads are lively, if occasionally a little frustrating, but they're very lively. And, people got used to them being in the front page really fast. We put some filters in there for people who didn't want to see them, and that's fine. So far, so good. Like, I'm really happy with how it's going so far. And I'm looking forward... part of me is kind of... Well, okay. As much as I dread the new season because it's so much work,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it just to get people started, start the cycle, how it's really going to go every time without the giant catch-up articles. Mm-hmm. I just want to see how that goes and how it integrates with preview guide and stuff. That's sort of the next hurdle. We'll figure it out. Let's see. Turk Galimir asks, what do you think of the Tales of games? Well, you know what? I gotta tell you, whoever does the graphic design for those, like, geez, man, get a new job or something, because it's no good.
Zach is mean.
I'm joking, of course. I haven't played one since Tales of Symphonia, so...
You played... You're talking about the original Tales of Symphonia, right?
I played it on the PlayStation...
Yeah, you're talking about the PS2 version, I guess.
No, the PS1.
Oh, okay.
PS1, the side-scrolling one. This is it looked like a Super Nintendo game.
Is it side-scroller? You might be thinking of a different one.
There's a Tales of game where it's like 16-bit, almost 16-bit style graphics. And it's not like a side-scrolling platformer, but the battles are like in a side-scroll thing. Like it's ah, fuck it. I haven't played one since the original PlayStation. Whatever the one that was on the original PlayStation, that's the one I played. Brady does that was a joke. Brady does the graphic design for all.
Yeah, I do. I do the packaging for the Tales of games. Usually, I mean, it's not always, but I've done the last 4 Tales games. So I've done Zillia. I've done Tales of Symphonia Chronicles, the big collector's box set for that. I did Tales of Zillia 2. And right now I'm working on Tales of Heart 2. They're a lot of work. I like them. They're really amazing artwork. Really cool stuff. Some of it's a UFO table, so there's a lot of restrictions, and it's just a lot of work. But yeah, it's really fun to create all that stuff. I got to, for Zillia 2 and Symphonia, I got to create all the CD soundtrack art and all that, and the steel books and the bevel layers and all that. And it's like, oh, I get to decide where this is bumpy on the front. That's fun. But yeah, they're a lot of fun to work on and cool artwork. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time to play them. They're really long games, but the art, I always enjoy the art and just making art. Just putting together the pieces for it. A lot of work. I'm always dead by the end of one of those projects, though. I took, after Tales of Zillia 2, hopefully whoever bought that is enjoying it, but I took like a week off because I was just so dead, because it's all deadlines. It's all deadlines.
Okay. Alright. Jiro asks, how much control do you think an anime director usually has over the work of a writer, both positive and negative? Well, every production is completely different, and you're going to have all those decisions also go through the production committee. So the creative staff, as we recently learned in the podcast we did with the Under the Dog guys, the creative staff don't make a lot of decisions just on their own. Everything goes through the production committee. So you might not have a situation where a director is directly telling a writer what he wants, or a writer disagreeing with the director. All those decisions go through the production committee. So, not every single time. Of course, every production is different. I'm speaking in generalizations here, but it's my understanding that creative process is heavily controlled by the production committee, and so it's not like the director will go in and tell the writer to change something, or maybe he will, but then that decision has to be approved by the committee and all that stuff. So, it's a different process over there than the way it is here. But even then, like, most directors will trust the screenwriter. They'll make changes, like, day of and stuff, but, and while they're shooting, and they'll do rewrites and things like that, but it's a collaborative process, so, yeah. Brandon Lee asks, are there any Bandai Entertainment shows that haven't picked up yet that you'd like to see? Yeah, Wolf's Rain still hasn't been relicensed, for whatever reason. It's still out there.
Wolf's
Rain. Nobody picked it up. Wolf's Rain.
Why won't anyone love Wolf's Rain?
Yeah. Anybody
surprising.
Else?
Is there a Blu-ray release in Japan yet, or no?
No, I don't think so. Even if there was, it's early digipaint, so it's not really going to look that great on, I would settle for a remastered DVD. That would be fine.
Well, I mean, it feels like that, if there was a Blu-ray release, it would probably get picked up like that.
Probably. Anybody? Any other Bandai Entertainment stuff that hasn't been?
Does anybody have Outlaw Star?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so.
Saber Marionette and Jada X.
Yeah, just about everything's been picked up.
Yeah, pretty much anything good. Like, Big O's, Sentai's got Big O, and that's getting Blu-ray, even though I think it's upscale, but either way, cool to have that. Most of everything else, like, other than, like, Gundam stuff, but, like, I don't think anybody's really sort of like clamoring for like Gundam Wing at this point right now.
It would sell pretty well if somebody put it out.
Right, it would sell, but it's not like people are begging for it, though. Like, I think people like want Cowboy Bebop. Like, they really want that Blu-ray, but I don't think people are like, yeah, we need Gundam Wing. But if they put it out, it would sell, definitely. Like, even Blue Submarine's number 6 got re-released, guys. Like, there's not much more than that Bandai catalog to get.
Yeah, it's been picked clean. RX asks, do any of you play Western visual novels? What do you recommend? I certainly do not, and I don't think Brady does either.
Mm-hmm.
Hope.
Well, I mean, there's a fairly big list. I think just as a like looking at the progenitor of where the small but relatively larger new interest in visual novels in the West came from, you should probably look at Katoa Shoujo, unless you're squeamish about sex scenes, because there's sex scenes in it, but you can turn those off. So you should look at Katoa Shoujo because it's responsible for the big, I wouldn't say boom, but noticeable upturn in visual novel interest in the West. And Cinders is really good. I would definitely play that one. I mean, there's some other stuff, but I mean, I would start in on those two, and then there's a bunch of other little things. They're all kind of small. They're all kind of tiny, so it's still a very tiny niche, but if you go into, like, the Lemmasoft forums, they'll tell you, like, which ones are the best written ones, which ones are the best looking ones, but to start with, like, Katoa Shoujo is the most relevant, and Cinders is one of the best made, so, yeah.
Giga Shame asks, says, Zach, you mentioned that supporting Under the Dog is a conflict of interest. Why is that, and what do you think of Kotaku and similar publications recently banning their writers from participating in game Kickstarters? Well, it's a tough question that everybody kind of has their own answer to. My answer to it is I feel weird directly giving my own money to help produce something that I will eventually have to oversee a review of. That seems to me like a step too far in maybe an ethically questionable direction. I don't want to use too harsh a language here because it's really not how I feel about it. And I kind of feel like there's several different good answers to this, and everybody can decide for themselves what they feel is correct. The only anime Kickstarter that I've contributed to was the Bubblegum Crisis thing, and that's because I'm pretty sure you're not going to be able to buy that any other way. So you have to get it through that. And we do want to have a review of that, so if that's the only way I can buy something to have a review of it on the site, then I will kick in for it, and so I can just get the physical copy. If it's just a DVD, if it's just getting a DVD produced, that's fine. But literally just contributing to a show getting produced, that's a little much. In my opinion, and that's just for me. I don't judge anybody else for doing it. I don't look down on people or think that their ethics are wrong or something. Everybody's got their own answer for it. As far as what Kotaku did, if they're telling even their freelancers that they can't contribute to Kickstarters, I think that's bullshit. I think freelancers are freelancers and should be allowed to do what they want, provided it's not a massive conflict of interest for the site. A conflict of interest is when you have a freelancer who's reviewing a show that he worked on. Mm-hmm. That's a conflict of interest. A conflict of interest is when you get any kind of color commentary or opinion on a thing that person directly financially benefited from or otherwise was involved in the production and stands to benefit from it succeeding. That's a conflict of interest. To me, I just don't even want the appearance of, well, I paid some money to have this thing produced, and now I have to publish a review of it that I'm also overseeing and editing. I would just rather not even raise the question. I would just rather just stay away from it entirely. Those things will succeed or not succeed, not based on my $20 kick-in. So I can sit back, wait for it to get produced, like Under the Dog just did, and we'll review it when it comes out. And my hands are, in my opinion, clean of any sort of conflict of interest. Even just the appearance of one. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. It's a tough question. Like I said, everyone's got to answer it for themselves. I don't think there's one standard that everyone needs to be held to. I think it's different in every industry, for every person, for every type of journalist, and all that shit. Real Invalid Name asks, are streaming sites like Crunchyroll, Hulu, Netflix going to be a gateway for new anime fans like Toonami has been in the past? Sure. Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, any way that gets it into people's living rooms is a potential gateway, so yeah. I mean, they're more popular than ever, so. So yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know people that have gotten into anime through streaming officially, so I don't know them, but I have a younger sibling who was like, oh yeah, my friends are into anime, and they basically just watch it on Netflix and stuff like that.
Well, it feels to me like, oh, this is the new Toonami, or this is the new sci-fi channel anime night. Like, it's just the new way to just run into it casually.
Right, but it also means there's less, like, buzz over a specific thing, and it's more like you kind of have to want to seek it out, because with Netflix, it's, you know, I think you kind of have to be looking for it, and it's not one of those things where it's a select tiny group of programs where you and other people are going to be in tune with it at the same time. It's, you know, you have to be interested in it, and then you have to, like, forcibly introduce it to other people. I think it's maybe more of an initiative. You know, the internet being what it is, it's more of an initiative thing than a passive thing.
Well, I mean, maybe partially, but I think that, like, you know, if you're into even animation at all, you're going to be hit in the face on Netflix with the whole bar that's, oh, here's a bunch of these anime titles. Maybe I'll check out this one that is about vampires. I like vampires. I'll check this out. And even Hulu will have a bunch of stuff on the front page from time to time, too. So, I mean, it's not like it's not there just to run into it. But, yeah, I think the fact that there's so much more of it spreads it out so much further. Like, there's like, oh, did you see this? Like, no, I was watching this one. Like, instead of like, oh, here's four shows that are the only four shows on TV. That's completely, that I completely see. But I think you still run into it just casually, too.
Okay. Age Renoir wants to know, Hope, what you think about the new Digimon series announcement. Do you have any expectations for it?
I am genuinely excited, and not because it's a new Digimon series, because those have been made, like, those keep getting made for the past, like, 10 years or whatever. That franchise has never really gone away. And people would ask me, are you excited about Young Hunters Through Time or whatever? And I'm like, I know that's not the actual title, whatever it's called, Young Hunters. And I'm like, no, I'm not, because I'm too old. I'm not too old to enjoy it, but, like, my relationship with Digimon is I enjoy the stuff that I was young and saw and look back on in retrospect. Like, I'm just not really looking at the stuff that's made for new 9-year-olds, because I'm not a new 9-year-old that they're trying to sell Digimon to. So, I mean, I look at that stuff just out of curiosity, but I'm not excited for it. I am genuinely excited for this because it is aimed at people who grew up with the show, and it's supposedly, like, for a teen audience. That's weird to me. Like, that's, I can't think of another toy vehicle anime that has done this. I'm blanking. I could be wrong, but other.
Well,
stuff, like,
you could say that what is it? Pokemon Chronicles or whatever they did recently. That really weird game, super heavy game based Pokemon is kind of like that.
I guess I don't. I mean, like, you might be right. I'm just not familiar with it. But speaking for an anime specifically. Like, Pokemon
I'm talking about the one that you told me to watch. What was it? It's really short. It's like a half hour long. It's like 5 episodes.
Oh, that. Yeah, that was. Yeah. That wasn't for adults. I mean, it was a nostalgia thing, but it was also, like, for kids, too. Like, that was. This is weird. Like, this is, I mean, like, the Pokemon thing that was made that was for, like, that was, like, an adaptation of the games directly, that was still, like, it was
Pokemon Origins.
It was minimally animated, and it was meant to, like, celebrate the history of the show, but it's also totally for kids. This is like, hey, if you saw Adventure when you were 9, these are those characters as young adults. That's bizarre to me. I've never seen that done with a toy vehicle. So I'm eminently curious, because I'm just like, what is this gonna be? I don't, you know, is this gonna be Joe in college? Joe's the oldest one, so is this gonna be Joe in college and everybody else in high school? Like, that's, huh? Like, I'm just really curious as to what the show is going to be. So, yeah, absolutely interested. I don't have high hopes for it. I'm just like, what is this even going to be? So, yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, like, the same thing. I watched the trailer, and, man, do they really push the nostalgia in that trailer, too.
They were like, hey, this is not for selling toys to new kids. This is for you from 1998 or 1999. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like, you remember this, right? You remember all this stuff. Well, we're bringing it back.
So, yeah, curious.
Okay, we got time for a few more here. If you guys want to send a few more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, well, I feel like Pokemon Origins was, like, a super nostalgia grab, just period, without any other thought.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't. People I guess, don't want to hear this, but Pokemon Origins was, like, it was animated for, like, $2, except for the last episode, which was Production IG, but the other three were really cheap-looking, and also it was soulless. I just, you know. And, like, it was just sort of flat and soulless.
Aquaditious asks, Brady, what's your favorite story about collecting DVD extras that you're allowed to share?
Mostly just how much, how interesting it is to, contact these people and see if they're interested in doing anything with these old shows. The two stories I have are, Kathy Weslock, who people know on, like, My Little Pony and all that. She was on the show Cyber 6 I worked on, and she was really cool. I emailed her and said, hey, do you remember the show? Blah, blah, blah. And she was really into it, and she donated her time to do a commentary on the show, and she's super cool. Just it's interesting to see who is actually interested in, like, actually contributing. The other is interesting. We're also working on Castle of Cagliostro, and David Hayter, the Hollywood director / Solid Snake voice actor, he played Lupin in that, and he actually contacted us, and he was like, whatever you want to do, you know, just let me know, interview, whatever, I'm in for it. And he turned out to be like, it turned out that he watches that and, like, other Miyazaki movies with his daughter, and just I was pleasantly surprised for a guy who probably spent, you know, 3 or 4 days on a movie and, you know, 15 years ago doing the voice for it, was really engaging and has been super engaging past the interview we did with him. So those have been some of the, you know, funnest stories. And yeah, I mean, the other part of it is like just finding like just how, like, a lot of the reason why certain things don't get re-released are mostly because nobody knows who has the rights to certain things, or like, like, the people who own the rights have died, so you don't know, like, where they went. So it's sort of weird unfolding, like, where the rights go. Like, there's one thing, and I can't really say what it is, but we were looking for, like, who owns the rights or where the contracts for this thing were. And one of the companies who was involved in this thing is convinced that it was not a legitimate product and it was a bootleg product, but it's all because they lost the contracts for it. It's just sort of weird stuff like that.
Okay. A lot of people asking help about your visual novel that you're making, where it's what the status is on that.
Really close. It is at this point, like, I've gone through and I've gotten all the like the proper images together for compiling it into an executable and distributing it as a demo, and now I'm just running tests, and so basically a couple days away. It's on the lip of a cliff about to fall off into your lap, so really close at this point.
The demo, not the full game.
No, yeah, the demo, yeah, the full game, that's a long ways away. But I should clarify, the demo is about 2 hours of playtime and is about 40 choices. So it's big.
All right, and they can find that. Where can they find that?
The development thread is on Lemmasoft forums, but I guess, like, it's all it has right now is a Tumblr address. So it's pangodango.tumblr.com.
All right. So if you want to see that, you can go there. JROA83 asks, where do you stand on adaptations not being all that faithful to the original source material towards the middle or the end, like FMA 2003, Planetus? If the show is good on its own and it's different from the manga, I don't care. I don't care. And if I've already read the manga, I don't want super faithful version of it, because I've already seen that story. In fact, I do not understand people that just want 100% faithful panel-by-panel animated recreation of this manga that they've already read. I want something new. I don't want the exact same story. Mix it up. And if you mix it up good, and, like, make it more interesting, or not necessarily more interesting, but just different in a cool way that's, you know, at least somewhat faithful to the spirit of the original story, but it's a new take on it, I'm all for it. I get bored by stuff like Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, because I read most of that manga, and it's just that, and I already saw that, so I don't need to see it again. Whereas the 2003 one was great because it was different. So I'm all for, like, changes. I I want to see something new, and I love new interpretations of things that are executed really well. Like, take a thing I love and turn it into something crazy and different, and so long as it's crazy and different in a good way, I'm all for it.
Well, it's like, too, I mean, when you take a comic book, you can't just translate it panel by panel. Usually that's boring. Like, you have to make changes. Yeah. Otherwise, the adaptation usually suffers.
Yeah. I found out that apparently the Tokyo Ghoul, which I'm writing about, so I hear a lot about it, it's like 12 episodes this season, but it covers like 50 chapters. And I'm like, thank you, Lord. Like, it's not like 50 episodes. Like, this story doesn't need to be 50 episodes. I don't need to... it's so tight. Like, that, the pacing of that show, it is an action show. It's super tightly paced. There's a lot of, like... There's long dialogue sequences, but they're interesting and they're dynamic, and it just moves, and it's like, oh, because it took 50 chapters, took the best parts. I heard apparently they switched to... there's villain arcs, obviously. It's like, this is the bad guy this time. This is the bad guy this time. They took two of them and switched them around, apparently, for pacing reasons. And it's like, yeah, I want to see big changes like that, that, like, emphasize pacing and tone over just, oh, let's copy these panels, you know? It's like, yeah, do that, please. I appreciate it, you know?
Well, it's like the old, you know, adapting a book into a movie, you just can't do it directly. Like, you have to make changes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Penguin Truth brings up the fact that Hellsing Ultimate, which is more faithful to the manga, is better than Hellsing TV. Well, no shit. Like, that's an example in the other direction of, well, they changed it up, but it wasn't good.
Yeah.
What was the bad guy's name in that? The end guy?
Incognito.
Incognito. Yeah. That's, oh, my God.
That's
that
the
terrible.
Thing. It's not guaranteed to be better. You can screw up an adaptation by being liberal, but at least you are giving yourself the opportunity to make something that stands on its own. You know?
And
it's like...
Yeah. And, like, my biggest disappointment, actually, with Hellsing Ultimate... Hellsing Ultimate's one of those cases where I would say, like, you know what? The OVAs, they're fine. Read the comics, because... Even with the budget that they had, they still really couldn't bring that art style, like, to life. It's so crazy in the manga that it's so psychedelic that even with the OVAs being really faithful, it still fell short. Like, I would look at the pages in the manga and go, like, this is some crazy illustration in here. And then you see the OVA, and it's kind of stilted.
Well, one thing
it doesn't quite look right, and I'm like, okay, well, I just prefer this. I just prefer the original, because that's what I really loved about Hellsing mostly was the illustration.
I'm not sure it's meant to move.
It's not. Yeah, it's probably not even meant for it. So,
well, like, the thing, you look at those illustrations in that comic, it's like he cared more about just like tone and setting, just like what the. Like, he cared more about just, like, cool shots and just cool-looking illustrations than he did any kind of, models or anything like that. Because, like, Alucard between panels just looks completely different. But it all works because it's just, like, so, like, the illustrations are crazy. Like, yeah. he doesn't really care at all about, like anatomy or anything like that. So long as it looks cool. Like, that's the sort of the takeaway from the art and the manga of... Hellsing. Like, that's what I really liked about it.
I feel like there are lots and lots of pages of Hellsing you could take out, and if you colored it in a certain way, it would not look out of place on a utility pole in, like, Height Ashbury in 1968. Like, it's so crazy psychedelic. Like, some of the illustration in there just gets nuts. And, it probably just wouldn't work in animation. And to wit, like, those OVAs don't look good. Plus, by the end... It's so fucking crazy, you can't even really tell what's going on.
Yeah, that's true in both mediums, because I read the manga just because I couldn't wait for the next one to come out. I was like, I have to know how this ends, and it was like, what's happening?
Yeah, what?
I can't.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I mean, like, adapting his art style feels like trying to adapt, like, Mike Mignola's art style to animation, and that doesn't really work either.
No, it kind of doesn't. Okay, we're going to close with this one. And I'm going to actually open it up a little bit. Cryptical88 asks, have any of you ever engaged in fanfiction, forum role-playing, or any such fan activities that you may or may not be embarrassed about now? I'm going to widen this question to, like, the nerdiest thing you've done. You can go with that, Or if that maybe doesn't apply to you, you can take it and say, this is like the nerdiest thing that I've ever done. And Brady, do you want to start?
Oh, geez. Oh, hard one on me first. Yeah. The nerdiest thing I've ever done. God, I've sort of turned that into like a business, really. Like,
you made like, a job, yeah. So did I. So.
Just like reading and writing all this crazy stuff about like for all these extras on like Cyber Six. Like that was, I think I out nerded on that because I went and found all this. All these trade articles, how much the budgets for all the episodes were, who talked to who. I got these like Argentinian interviews, translated those like stories from the creators who were pissed off about how that show, like, you know, how it didn't make them a lot of money. Like I contacted like the writers of that show. I got like behind the scenes information from them. Like just like I think that's like the most recent nerdiest thing I've ever done. I started pretty early, and like when I one of my second jobs was in anime, and I was a complete, absolute like super nerd. So I'm amazed that anybody back then could, you know, like now I realize like, oh, this is socially awkward. Why am I doing this? But then I had no idea about being socially awkward or not. So I'm sure that I was just this unbearable fanboy at the time. Like you have to say it like this. This doesn't say it like this. And anime fans don't like this. I don't know. It's hard to think of something like nerdier than what I just did.
Okay. Hope.
So something that was not involved in like me, like kind of making it a job of sorts. So ignoring the whole video reviewing thing because that's pretty nerdy. I guess. I think I'm not embarrassed about, but it is the nerdiest thing I have ever done, like, not for profit, just poured hours and hours into, was the Fruits Basket radio drama that I made. Because that was 24 episodes.
For no money.
No money. A cast of dozens and dozens of people, a Foley artist, a composer, faithfully telling the story of that manga, and, yeah, but I mean, like, I'm not embarrassed about that. It's just that it's insane that I did that because nobody should ever do that, like, for free. It's too much. Well, nobody should do that for free and wear every hat, which was I wrote the script, which you say, oh, you just copied dialogue from the manga. No, I had to heavily rewrite it because in order for it to make sense as an audio-only thing, taking a visual-only thing, making it an audio-only thing, and trying to make it comprehensible to people who don't know, like, Japanese culture-y stuff. And, yeah, so I did that, and then I directed it, and then I mixed the whole thing, and I played one of the parts, too, and, like, yeah. So that's the nerdiest thing I've ever done. And then, like, the thing that's actually embarrassing, I wanted a Pokedex when I was little, but I couldn't have one. So I borrowed a copy of the, this was back when Gold and Silver was the newest gen. So I borrowed a copy of Pokemon Stadium 2 from a friend for the N64, and that has an encyclopedia on it. And I put that into the N64, ran cables from the VCR to the N64, like, in a way that where I could record a VHS tape, I could record the footage of the game onto a VHS tape, and I went through the encyclopedia and, like, pulled up every entry. For 3 seconds on this page, 3 seconds on this page. There's 251 Pokemon at that point. So that was hours of tape. And I just put that together over a very long period of time.
She's like, let me pull up my Pokedex. Hold on, let me put this VHS tape in, and I gotta fast forward to an hour and 5 minutes.
Well, I never left the house, so I was a kid that didn't go out or anything like that. So it actually kind of was convenient, because if you just put it on fast forward and they're all in order, then you can... You know, but I was playing the handheld version, but I had all the extreme, like, all the specific stats in numbers on that VHS tape alongside me. So that is the most embarrassing nerdy thing I've ever done. So, yeah.
See, the thing is, like, when you talk about that Fruits Basket thing, like, I know that's super nerdy and crazy, but all the skills that you built doing that, you can apply them now to other things. Like,
well, yeah,
you,
I'm super glad that I did it, but
yeah.
Goddamn. Like, the number of hours that went into it for kind of no reward. I mean, like, there's some reward. There were people that enjoyed it, but yeah. Definitely the nerdiest thing I've ever done.
Like, I think if anything like that where you're building your skills on top of just doing that for free is worthwhile. Like, I mean, of all, like, the anime music videos that I made of, like, Gundam Wing to Danger Zone and just all the terrible, awful combinations you can think of for 90s anime, like, I'm not embarrassed by it because, I mean, hey, I was 16. I'm mixing Matrix music with Batman Beyond cartoon scenes. It's not that great, but I learned how to edit there, and now I edit trailers. Like, I built a skill from the dumb, nerdy things that I did. So yeah. I don't feel embarrassed about any of that, even though I think some people might be.
So I actually kind of wanted, like, disclose this just in case anybody, like, ever did listen to that drama. Like, because the character is supposed to be male, but isn't exactly, and the character had to be played by a woman who basically used a pseudonym because they can't reveal that the character's... You have to make them think that the character's male. It's very complicated. But I uncredited played Akito in that drama. So the person that's credited as Akito there is actually me. That was me the whole time. So if you ever want to hear me screaming and gouging a man's eye out, I got to do that for Fruits Basket. And I just want to take credit for it because it's been years and I never said that was me. But that was me. So I played Akito in that thing, and that was fun. And I felt good because I knew people weren't buttering me up because they didn't know that it was me doing that. And they said, "Oh, the person playing Akito is good." And I'm like, "Haha, I know that they're not, sucking my dick on that one. That's haha because I wasn't credited."
Okay.
Wait, what's your nerd stuff, Zach?
Yeah. Well, there's one that I have two. Neither of them involve building skills towards my job or anything. Like, you know, I've done plenty of nerdy shit, like, with regard to anime, but it all eventually became my career, so I don't really consider it. But I have two things. The less nerdy one is getting involved with a giant group of people and putting on a 24-hour outdoor sleepover before the release of The Return of the King. it was called a line party back then, and there were costume contests and giveaways and a whole shitload of nerds hanging out in front of this theater for a day in the fucking freezing-ass cold, nerding out about Lord of the Rings. And, yep. That was a long... I was on the local news back then for that shit. That's the less nerdy thing.
That's the less nerdy thing, but did you have fun doing it?
Yeah, sure. I guess. But the one that I used to win the... Oh, who's the biggest nerd? Who did the most shamefully nerdy thing ever? Is the fact that I was a LARPer in college. And not just any LARPing. People are familiar with World of Darkness and Vampire the Masquerade. I LARPed Vampire the Masquerade. That's not as nerdy. That's not as bad as the fact that we also LARPed Changeling the Dreaming, which is the fairy...
Yay!
Game that World of Darkness had. We LARPed Changeling the Dreaming. And I participated in that for a long time. To my credit, I usually just kind of trolled the game a lot, but I did participate. And it was a big mistake. Yeah, those people were just full of drama. And yeah, it wasn't a great time in my life, but there were some good times to be had. those were the days. But yeah, that usually if anybody starts like, "Oh man, I'm so nerdy, I showed up 3 hours early for Spider-Man," or "Oh man, I'm so nerdy, like I have every Wolverine comic," and I'd be like, "Oh man, I'm so nerdy, I used to live action role play a Changeling the Dreaming." Everyone just stops talking.
Who was your fairy character, Zach?
I don't remember. I don't remember that stuff. I remember I always played the same clan in Vampire, but I don't really remember, because that fairy game was really bad. Like, it was a bad game. I mean, all those games are the same. You just pick a stereotype based on these clans, quote unquote. They're all kind of the same. But I don't really remember any of the stuff about the changeling thing. So yeah. But yeah, that's the nerd. Easily, like, I will never do anything that nerdy ever again. Mm. So let's close on that. But guys, thank you for showing up and answering a bunch of questions, and thanks to the chat for hanging out and listening to us for all this time. Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us.
Bye bye.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Brady and Hope for stopping by. Theme song is called Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you all next week.